Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. I'm Marzieh Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the Bahrainis have faced a brutal crackdown by the regime in Manama. The people of Bahrain have once again shown their resilience, as on Saturday, at least 10,000 Bahrainis took to the streets once again to demand an end to the Western-backed hereditary monarchy in their country.
Thousands of Bahrainis have taken to the streets of Sar, a district in west of the capital, Manama. The demonstrators are calling for structural political changes in the tiny Persian Gulf sheikdom. The massive rally comes despite a deadly Saudi-backed crackdown on anti-regime protests. The latest round of violence comes despite an earlier lifting of the emergency rule. It is part of a four-month non-stop Saudi-backed crackdown on peaceful Bahraini protests. People are demanding the downfall of the US-backed regime of Al Khalifa. U.S. ally Saudi Arabia sent military forces to Bahrain back in March to help suppress the revolution. Dozens have been killed, some tortured to death, as part of the heavy-handed tactics used to crush public dissent. All the same, the people of Bahrain are still on the streets, demanding an end to a hereditary rule founded by Britain. Disappointed with the West's muted response to the brutal crackdown, the people of Bahrain look determined to seek their legitimate rights, and they are using peaceful protest to achieve this goal.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest to this program from London, from the Bahrain Freedom Movement, Mr. Saeed Al-Shahabi. From New York, anti-war activist and journalist, Mr. Don DeBar. And from Manama, joining us via Skype, President Bahrain Center for Human Rights, Mr. Nabil Rajab. Welcome, all of you, to the program. Appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Let's start off in Manama. And Mr. Rajab, today we saw that at least 10,000 Bahrainis showed up on the streets on this Saturday. Tell me, how likely is this to force the regime to think that perhaps what they have been doing so far has not been very progressive and that they may change the route that they have started?
Well, first of all, the call for the gathering today was made by Al-Wafaq Political Society, which is a recognized society, and I think they were allowed to be together there, and the gathering were not it was not attacked. And the Sheikh Ali Salman spoke in the gathering, talking there how they see the dialogue and how they see the future into dealing with government. From the other side, we have the king announced that forming of or appointing the head of the parliament as the man who should take the lead in the dialogue between the people and the government. And this is an indication, another indication, that shows that the ruling elite are not serious about the dialogue, especially appointing the head of the parliament where people have difference with the problem that now people are in the street, that this parliament is not functioning, it's not working. 10 years of trial is proven to be a useless body, and that's why everybody in the street, they thought this not anymore is working for their benefit. Now you are poor. I mean, then also he has, if they come to a conclusion in the dialogue according to the statement released, then it has to go to the prime minister, and the prime minister has to study, and then again it comes back to the parliament. All the parties were appointed around this president or the king or the prime minister talking about it. It's now needed by people who are part of the problem. And for and in any way, they cannot be part of the solution. The parliament itself is a part of the problem. For 42 years, it's part of the problem. Now, they're hitting the dialogue. It's not serious. That shows government is not serious about the dialogue. But I think the continuation of a protest, the continuation of people in the street calling for their rights, calling for their legitimate grievances, is the right thing that finally will have to push government to give some of to meet some of those people's demand.
Okay.
But till this moment, what is being introduced by the king, it's very disappointing. That shows they are not serious about dialogue, but they just try to satisfy some Western countries' concern more than satisfy people's demand or grievances that have been raised.
Okay, let me turn to London and get Mr. Shahabi in on this discussion. Now, it seems that fear is no longer a factor, and it sort of reminds me of the revolutions in Egypt and Yemen when people basically, they seem like they have gone beyond fear and it's no longer a factor. Do you think that that is what has happened in Bahrain?
Thank you very much, and I like also to greet your guests, especially Nabil Rajab in Bahrain, who is talking under, of course, under difficult circumstances. The people of Bahrain have made their demands clear, and they have always said that they want a downfall of the regime. The regime must go. I think this is the almost there is a consensus on the, in that demand. However, those the people who are ready to engage in dialogue know and are well aware that the regime is not serious about it. And as the Nabil has just said, that to appoint the head of the Shura Council is half elected, half appointed. It is not a parliament, it is a Shura Council, consultative council. To appoint its director, its head, to engage in this dialogue means that the ruling family is not concerned with dialogue. It is just it is just a side issue that has been left to this man whose stance have fluctuated. He is the person who had sworn on 1973 constitution because he was a member of that of the parliament of that in 1973. But then he gave away, he gave up that constitution, and he again swore on a different constitution. So he's not a man of principle or of commitment to any real principles. Now the people have made their points clear, especially those who are in jail, and we are aware that most of the leadership of the revolution are behind bars or are in hiding or they have fled the country. So those people whose words and whose stand count are not involved in this dialogue, which means that whatever is going to happen between the head of the Shura Council and whoever is engaged with him, it will mean nothing. The people will continue their revolution. The international community, luckily now, is saying its word decisively against the regime, and it has really defeated the regime's ambitions to have the Formula One races and other things. So we are in for a long, long period of unrest, unsettled political situation, and a definitely strong stand by the people whose demands have not changed since they started on the 14th of February.
Okay, let me turn to New York and get Mr. DeBar in on this discussion. Now, we have reports of poets and doctors being tortured for doing no more than either writing about what is happening in Bahrain or simply treating the wounded. How is this allowed to happen in this day and age?
Well, it's not only allowed to happen, the thing that's remarkable to people here that learn of this, and unfortunately, the American media is not covering this very well. The mainstream media, the information coming through that, people in the United States would be you know, at severe difficulty to determine which is Bahrain, which is Libya, which is Saudi Arabia, which is Iran. They don't know who is the friend or foe of the moment, and it changes almost like Orwell predicted in 1984
at the drop of a hat. And so why is it being covered in that way?
But the situation...
In your perspective, why is the American media covering it in that way?
Well, first you have a president who was elected with the perception that he was going to end war in Iraq, for example. That was the big distinction between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton as Democratic candidates in the primary season in 2008. And there are many Democrats and others who consider themselves progressives who still believe that that's actually happening, where in fact the war in Iraq has expanded, the war in Afghanistan has expanded into Pakistan, and the war on Libya, and now they have drones in Yemen. You know, these things are all happening under Obama. But there's telling things even with respect to Bahrain. Not only has the United States allowed or sponsored the occupation of Bahrain by the Saudis, but if you go back to the first full year of Barack Obama's administration, they doubled the military aid to the government of Bahrain, and very recently they've essentially begun the process of doubling the size of the Fifth Fleet's military base there. So there has been, since this administration came into power, a move to, and this has been replicated throughout the region, a move to consolidate American power, and now they're taking their first moves against Africa in Libya and through proxies in Cote d'Ivoire in generation.
Okay, now, Mr. Shahabi, turning back, I'm sorry, Mr. Rajab, let's get you back in on this. Now, in general, why do you think that there's not that much of an official international outcry with the situation that's taking place in Bahrain? Mr. Rajab, can you hear me? Okay, let me
Can you repeat your question?
Yes, where is the official international outcry with the situation that is going on in Bahrain?
Well, you know, we are counting on the international human rights institution and civil society.
Okay, we seem we're having a problem.
Countries, parliament, more than we're counting on the Western countries. Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please, sir.
Yes, what I'm saying, we are not counting of government. We know that the double standard of many countries, especially when it comes to the Bahrain, or which is part of Gulf countries, which is part of neighboring of Saudi Arabia. And we know that now that Saudi Arabia have more influence on those democratic Western countries more than those Western countries' influence in Saudi Arabia and in the region. We know this complication. We are caught up in this complication where nobody wants to anger Saudi Arabia, nobody wants to anger the Gulf countries because of the oil, because of the economic interests, because of a military presence. But we did good, I think, as a human rights movement around the world in the past few weeks. We're counting more on the people of those countries. We're counting more on the human rights organization. We're counting more on those members of parliament who believes in democracy, who believes in human rights, who believes that democracy and human rights should be applied in Bahrain as it should be applied in Libya or Syria or Egypt. And I mean, as you see, your colleague saying, it's not much been covered. It's not been much covered maybe in Europe. We've seen lately it's improvement, but comparing us with Libya, comparing us with Syria and comparing us with Egypt, no, we don't have good coverage. Part of it because of people look at their interest. But slowly, slowly, I think human rights group could make the change. Formula One also used to think of their interest only, but today, a human rights movement, they could have an impact on the decision of the Formula One, because you can't separate human rights from sport. You can't separate human rights from international relations. You can't separate human rights from international or foreign policy. Each and every government in Western country, including United States, the free trade agreement we have in United States, the free trade agreement we have, or we're going to sign soon with European countries, all of it has, it's stated in this agreement that human rights is an important. There are articles concerning human rights. Those human rights articles, if they're not respected, this free trade agreement should be cancelled, as we have seen from labor union in the United States. So we are using these tools. We are using these available tools around those countries. We do not depend much on the government, as we can't change that. We count more on our people. We count more on human rights organization and human rights movement around the
world. So what you're saying, Mr. Rajab, is that the pressure is going to have to come from within these different countries, pressure from the people, by the people, by human rights groups on their governments.
We have seen now, for example, I mean, we have seen a couple of statements made by Obama. We have seen a few statements by European.
Okay, I think we've lost Mr. Rajab. We'll try to get him back on the line. Now, Mr. Shahabi, even with the harsh crackdown, using brutal force, where even children have not been spared, U.S. President Barack Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton hosted a Bahraini prince at the White House last week. Why is that the case? Does it mean that Washington supports this brutal crackdown that is taking place in Bahrain?
From day one, it was clear that Washington did not want a revolution to happen in Bahrain, and that they were really careful about Saudi Arabia. They were worried that their influence in the region may wane and may get weaker if any revolution sweeps away any of those autocratic regimes. It was clear from Washington's initial statements, although we must acknowledge that President Obama did speak to the ruler after the first crackdown against the demonstrators at Parade Square. However, since then they have he had changed his tone, and he became he and his Secretary of State Hillary Clinton changed their tone, and they became more conciliatory to the regime. And they, to the extent that they approved the invasion and the occupation of by Saudi Arabia of Bahrain, that was a very, very negative decision. And I think it is a far-reaching, destructive stand, especially when it comes to the idea of allowing a neighboring country to invade another country. Now, the situation today, we had expected that Washington would take the lead in safeguarding human rights situation in the country. We thought that he, President Obama would take a strong stand and rebuke the regime and the Crown Prince, whom he had met last week in Washington. Although he did not give the Crown Prince a really warm welcome, to the extent that they didn't appear on the same platform for a press conference, for a joint press conference, for fear of embarrassing questions from the press. However, he did meet him. He should have told him to release the prisoners. If President Obama was serious about his calls for dialogue, then the first step before any dialogue may be thought of should be to release the political prisoners. Today we have news that Mr. Abdul Wahab Hussein, who is the most senior of the political figures of the leaders of the revolution, who has been behind bars for 3 months and nothing has been heard of him since then except meager news. We have news today that he's in a very serious condition after being subjected to most horrific torture and mistreatment and ill-treatment. So I thought President Obama would call for the immediate release of political prisoners. He would call for the reinstatement of those who had been dismissed from their jobs. He would call for an immediate end to the military courts and to the release and dismissal of all the charges against, especially against the doctors and nurses. And he would call for the immediate arrest and detention and trial of those
okay,
who
Mr.
have been engaged
let me turn to
in,
New York. Mr.
DeBar,
let me switch over
torture.
To New York and get Mr. DeBar back in on this. How can Washington support, Mr. DeBar, bombing Libya because of what it calls stopping a repressive government and protecting civilian lives? Why isn't the same standard applied in Bahrain?
Yeah, it's an interesting question from both sides of it. You know, at the very first, the United States has been, you know, in a frenzy since September 11th of 2001, when three buildings were taken out by two airplanes. Just this past Monday, in one day, Tripoli was bombed 89 times over a 12.5-hour period, and that is in the 90-something day of the bombing of Tripoli. So the treatment, just in the case of that one city by the United States, as opposed to the way it likes to be treated itself, is completely out of scale. But if you compare the situation in Libya, where, by the way, the government is handing out guns to the people to defend the country against NATO, to the situation in Bahrain, where the guns are being given to the government by the Saudis. And those, in each case, Bahrain's government, 95% of their military hardware comes from the United States, and the Saudis, I don't know, somewhere between 50 and 100% comes directly from the United States. The U.S. is actually funding the suppression of the People's Revolution in Bahrain. And it's bedazzling to anyone that's paying attention here in the United States how these two things can happen simultaneously without a huge outcry. You would think you would at least hear it from members of Congress. But the information is so skewed in the media here now that most people are not aware of the simple facts that I just communicated to you, including many people in Congress.
Okay. Now, Mr. Shahabi, as Saudi Arabia has supported now the dictators of the region who are repressing the people and even given refuge to these dictators, do you think that the people of the regions of North Africa and the Middle East have been awakened to the real role of Saudi Arabia in supporting repression in the region?
Well, we are aware now that the counter-revolution is enforced by Saudi Arabia. We know that the Saudis are funding their allies. This is a news that was reported by Reuters last week, that it is supporting financially its allies and governments in order to stand against the revolutions. We know that even the German newspaper 2 days ago, Zeitung, published a story under the title "Saudi Arabia Leads the Counter-Revolution in the Middle East." So we are aware of the Saudi efforts to ensure that none of the revolutions does succeed. I want to remind you that yesterday the foreign minister of Bahrain had rebuked the people of Egypt for treating President Hosni Mubarak, former President Hosni Mubarak, in the way he had been treated. He thinks that they shouldn't have done that, although Hosni Mubarak had given the permission for the troops to attack demonstrators and to kill more than 400 people. Yet the foreign minister was adamant that Hosni Mubarak must not stand trial and that the people of Egypt must continue the path initiated by the late Anwar Sadat. It is a clear reference that the foreign minister of Bahrain is there to is calling for normalization of relations with Israel in accordance to Camp David. Now, the foreign minister of Bahrain is the person who is responsible for the relations with the neighboring countries, and he is instrumental in asking the Saudis to come and to invade Bahrain, and also he is instrumental in all these troubles that are taking place in the region in association with the Saudi regime. The Saudis are playing very dirty games, and unless that stops, and unless the general public of the Arab masses understand that Saudis are engaged in counter-revolution, unless they are aware of that and try to counter that, I am afraid that all the revolutions are under serious threat of failure because of the Saudi actions.
Okay, Mr. Saeed Shahabi, thank you so much. Mr. Don Dibar and Mr. Nabil Rajab, we thank all of our guests for being with us. And as always, viewers, we thank you for being with us with another close-up look at one of today's top headline stories. Join us, same place, same time tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew here in Tehran. Thank you so much, and goodbye.